If Reality Check Radio enriches your day and life, support us to keep bringing you the content, voices, perspectives, and dose of reality you won't get anywhere else. Visit www.realitycheck.radio/donate.
Welcome back to RCR Greenwashed Listeners with Jaspreet and Don. We figured it's time to have a bit of a catch-up with a regular on our show, Owen Jennings, who's now the chairman of the Methane Science Accord, a former politician and former leader of Federated Farmers. So welcome back to RCR Greenwashed, Owen. Great to have you on our show. And we figured we haven't, over the Christmas break, things go into silent mode. So we figured it's time to have an update from the Methane Science Accord and what's on your agenda for the months ahead. Hopefully you've got something big news you're going to drop on us today and we're going to really help you get it out there.
Well, it's good to be on your show. It's always a really interesting and worthwhile pursuit to join you. So very happy to do so. The Methane Science Accord has been pulling together a number of different ideas and trying to ascertain what we believe is the best way through the political maze, because ultimately, you know, we're requiring political decisions to be made. And you'll both be aware that political decisions are made in a totally different environment to, say, business decisions or I don't know, a host of other realms that we operate in. So we've now fundamentally pulled that together, and we'll be joining with others to appear in front of the Primary Production Committee. And then as part of that exercise, we'll be meeting with a number of ministers and MPs to put what we believe is a fairly succinct and hard-hitting conclusion from months and months of research and study from a number of scientists around the world and checked and rechecked those positions. So, yes, it's all starting to happen now. We've had a number of our members say, hey, what's going on? Are you guys gone to sleep? Well, no, we haven't. But we needed to be very sure about our ground. We needed to understand some complexities in the science area that are difficult to get your head around. No question about that. And when, you know, the best science you've ever done was learn how to milk a cow, then, you know, that becomes a little bit of a hurdle. So we're ready to go, and you'll be watching, I'm sure, with Reality Check Radio that we'll be making some good, hopefully good ground on the political front.
Yeah, so it's hard, isn't it, Owen, trying to get politicians to stop playing politics and just deal with the facts is the hard bit. And I imagine I've noted within farming groups, that's a problem as well. I mean, I think the older we get, we do see things as black and white, and we wish there would be no shades of grey. But the politicians of the day, and even the people that organise, you know, that supposedly represent farming, find plenty of shades of grey because they're a bit timid. So are you confident that you're going to be able to get rid of those shades of grey and really just say, this is the facts? We'd be disappointed if you don't use them. Do you think you can be that direct with the Primary Production Select Committees?
I think we've got to be. You know, the situation is clear. There's no kind of middle ground. What we have to recognise is that the nature of politics is compromised. I mean, you can say it's a bit sad, it's a pity, or a travesty, whatever you like. But it's the essence of politics, and political progress is made by compromise. So it's our right, and indeed our responsibility to put a very clear, unambiguous, very direct story in front of the politicians. If ultimately they compromise it, then that's their responsibility and they'll be accountable for it. What we are required to do is to be very clear, very direct, back up what we say with good qualification, with good reference, and stick to our guns.
You think they'll well, look, all that's fabulous. I hope all power to you on that. Do you think they'll play the card that former Minister Shaw and former Minister O'Connor constantly played? And even I have to say, it happened in the late last throes of the former National government, where trade ministers and climate ministers and others said, "Oh, but if we don't tick this box, you're going to have trade sanctions put upon you." Now, you see the protests in the Northern Hemisphere. And you know, you're wise enough to know what their game is up there. They've had a lot of privilege through their country's governance for years, and you know, you tick a few boxes and you get some payments from the other from the state. In the end, you sort of see that New Zealand has played this moral high ground business for years. Now, we don't we tick the boxes, we do all the right things, we don't get payments. And it's still come at us from the other side. Do you think the argument, sorry, I'm going around in circles, do you think the argument that New Zealand could face trade sanctions regardless if we even get this methane nonsense to kick for touch, they will still play games against us and put barriers to trade in?
Yeah, I think there's been a swing back towards protectionism in the last, I don't know, 3 or 4 or 5 years.
Yes.
You know, we saw great progress on free trade for quite a few decades. And you know, God bless him, Mike Moore played a very important role for many years on that front, and he deserves credit for it. So we're up against a bit of a tide at the moment that is flowing against us. Certainly, there's no room in the WTO rules for any action to be taken, you know, on any issue related with climate change. But you and I know that countries will disregard WTO rules, or as they once were, GATT rules, at the drop of a hat. I think what we need to do is build constituencies internationally. Two constituencies. There are other countries that are facing difficulties around methane and who are involved in export as well. So there's that constituency. And while it's clouded by countries that can also gain subsidies and offsets, that's important that we pursue that. The other area that we need to pursue internationally is the third world. You know, if you think about the moral issues around the developed world telling the African nations, the Asian nations, no, you can't use your coal, your oil, your minerals the way we have to succeed the way the developed world has over 150 years, is totally immoral. It's unjust, and there's no amount of, oh, well, we'll pay them off, because that money, and you know, there's been a fund set up by the United Nations for that purpose. That fund's been collared by, guess what, consultants in the developed world, not in the undeveloped world. So, you know, that kind of payoff isn't going to work. So New Zealand has two opportunities. We can go out and work with countries that are, have grass-fed ruminants and build a constituency in that way. And we can build a constituency with the third world. And one of the things that disappoints me greatly is that Federated Farmers currently and the industry groups haven't pursued those two options. We have the lowest carbon footprint in the world, not by a small margin, by a very significant margin. The next country behind us is a food exporter. In terms of their carbon footprint, is 40% worse than we are. That's very significant. The fact that we're not pushing that, by the way, and telling the Tesco's and international large-sized supermarkets, who are apparently those responsible for you know, this idea that we might get trade sanctions or consumer reactions, they've never used that. When have you ever heard New Zealand stand up and say we have the lowest carbon footprint? When have you bought a pound of butter or a bag of milk powder or a steak that's got written on clearly produced in the nation of the world with the lowest carbon footprint? You haven't. And that tells me that a lot of this nonsense around trade sanctions and consumer reactions is hot air. But if it is, if indeed there is a reaction, then, you know, I believe we've got a very strong position to go back to those people and put a good story to them. And that's what we should be doing. We should be making known to all of our customers and consumers around the world where we stand and what we're doing. The third leg, and I'm sorry I'm going on at length a bit here, but the third leg of this is that there are emerging technologies that are going to help us sequester carbon and deal with the methane issue, not because we need to, but it's just the nature of technology. People are committed, are able to come up with solutions to things. You know, I was just reading the other day that Toyota, for example, is a car manufacturer, hasn't really gone down the electric car route. They've been looking at using hydrogen options and even, you know, H2O options. We're an inventive people. Show us a problem, I'll show you a technical solution. So there's that safeguard, if you will, sitting in the back as well.
Yeah. Owen, when you last came on, it was September, and this was, you know, when we were under the reds. We're now under the blues. And yet, some things I think haven't changed, and this is me being very, very cynical. One of those is a gentleman I listened to last year sometime. There was this event in Invercargill called Everything to Gain, organized by a local catchment group authority called Thriving Southland. It was the headline event was Rod Carr, and he was followed by Vitalis Vengelis. He is one of our senior diplomats, deputy secretary of MFAT, Ministry of Foreign Affairs and Trade. And he spoke that time about time and again that how hard it is for him, that he has to sit holed up in a hotel when he's overseas, trying to find if there is some edge for New Zealand, something that he can, you know, spring upon the other party and give us an edge. And he said, and this is not a record, but his talk was something to the effect that he's run out of an edge. He's run out of how better can he sell New Zealand and New Zealand produce overseas. And what strikes me is the government might have changed. These diplomats haven't. They are still there, regardless of what's happened. And how do we impress upon career bureaucrats like these who say, you've just told us we are 40% better off than our next competitor. You know, so we are at the top of our game, farming-wise, productivity-wise, and hey, even emissions-wise, if you believe that emissions are, you know, my cows are changing your climate. But what do we do with bureaucrats like these who actually, they actually fervently believe in this?
It's interesting, isn't it? Because many of those same bureaucrats look at what is being said by Beef and Lamb, for example, but being said by Dairy NZ, Fonterra, being said by even Federated Farmers. And they look at that and they think, well, you know, we're on the right track trying to, you know, bring New Zealand into line with the rest of the world. I've always been a believer that, you know, New Zealand doesn't have the right to go and knock on a door in Washington and tell the American nation what to do, or Brussels, or London, or wherever it might be, Tokyo. And I've had a little bit of experience at being in international negotiations when, you know, New Zealand could have been Cameroons or you know, could have been Gabon or whatever, Nepal or something. You know, you're just another minor player while the big boys fight it out. And you know, I've sat and waited in outside the so-called green room while the USA and Europe and perhaps Japan, you know, negotiate. Well, I've always believed that while the elephants fight, you know, the mice scurry around and get on with their own business. And that's what we need to do. We just need to get on with our business. We don't need to be, knocked into shape by some big player just because there's a prevailing view that the world is going to end because of climate change. And so what we should be doing and what we're not doing is we should be helping those bureaucrats, those diplomats, those ambassadors, and those people to understand the reality of the situation. There should have been a plan in place led from the very top that says this is the direction we're going in as a country, and we need you to be fully on board, and you need to be confirming that position for us. We've got a sound position, even on the methane issue. It's very clear.
Yeah.
It doesn't need to be excused. It's reality. It's backed by sound science. Let's get out there and convince our own people and the rest of the world. And I don't see that as an insurmountable task. I think it's very doable.
So then something I think you're talking about, you know, show them the sound science. Maybe someone like Vitalis Vengelis needs to be sent this excellent article that recently appeared on Bassett Brash and Hyde. It's a post, quite a long article by another member of the Methane Science Accord, members, I should say, the couple Hamish and Amy Bielski, termed our research down on the farm. And it's a great article, but a couple of things that caught my attention. Maybe Vitalis Vengelis needs to read this one and give us justification about how he thinks that the 1,000th of a degree centigrade of warming caused by kiwi ruminants can figure into his trade negotiations, shouldn't we?
It's true. It's true. Actually, it's a good article. Mm. You know, Hamish and Amy are a great couple. They run an excellent farm, a high-quality farming unit. They're using very sound methods, and you know, we admire that. And I think getting on the Brash Bassett Hyde blog is a good outlet for their views and the views that the Methane Science Accord holds. And it's pleasing to see that there's been a good reaction to it amongst that readership. Unfortunately, yeah, it's another situation where, you know, we're not reaching a wide enough audience, and we need to get into a wider media, as well as what you know, Reality Check Radio is doing, and a number of other, the platform and similar groups. And those growing audiences are valuable, but we still need to hit wider. And I think the number of points that Amy and Hamish made are very sound, very helpful, and just contribute to bringing the public up to speed with what the reality is.
Yeah, look, that it is vital they do that, because, you know, on the other mainstream media outlets, that we've been attacked for even having Tom Sheehan, Dr. Tom Sheehan, on our show and his trip around New Zealand peddling sort of misinformation last year. We're still getting that grief from Stuff. It's odd, isn't it? They definitely do not want to. They've dug the hole so deep, and they've made their 25 years of output. They're trying to defend their constant output for 25 years in the face of, well, I wouldn't call it new information. It's information that's been there for a long time, and they just refuse to accept it. And of course, Owen, I have to go back to even 1998, when I started into this space of Kyoto protocols and climate and stuff. I actually did think there must have been a problem, because I trusted human nature to be honest and full of integrity. And it was only probably about 2008, you know, after leading the fight against ridiculous taxes, the fart taxes and things like that, with Jerry Eckhoff and others, I did think, well, there's something to do here. We have to smarten up. Our ruminants are causing a problem.
Mm.
And it took to about 2008 to really think, no, this is just a step too far. And then, of course, fast forward 10 years after that, we had the Happer and Van Wijngaarden output that just clearly shows methane from any source is completely irrelevant. The modelling that the IPCC used, their metrics they use, completely fallacious in the real world. Mm. So, you know, here we are. We have had 25 years of this, and it's going to take, you talk about an international alliance. I hope you can get there, because it's going to take a lot of pressure to wind this back. And I think, as Jaspreet sort of intimated earlier, the deck chairs have changed politically in this country, but has the mindset?
I think if we were tackling the CO2 issue specifically, you know, the mountain may be too high to climb. I mean, you know, we could talk about CO2 till the cows come home, and the, you know, there are issues there. By focusing down on methane, I think it gives us less of a mountain to climb. The difficulties aren't going to be so great, either scientifically or politically. But, you know, you reminded me of something, Don, and there's a word going around at the moment that's very, very popular as of the moment, and people talk about issues being siloed. And,
yes.
And in science, that's so true. You've got scientists who are delving into issues and have no idea what's going on around them, out even inside their discipline. So we've got a lot of scientists who haven't actually looked at, been made aware, or even considered the work that Happer and Weingarten have done, or a number of others. I mean, a guy Coe out of the UK who's a retired scientist. There's another German by the name of Wilglib. There are a number of them that have looked at the issue and said, my goodness, you know, we need to expose the realities here. So, yeah, it's a challenge, and it's not going to be easy. But I think that by staying outside of the CO2 issues, we can probably make some reasonable progress. And I wouldn't underestimate the value of linking up with the third world in regard to the way they're being treated. You know, I've been in mud huts in Africa. I've seen subsistence farming up in Nagaland in the back of Bangladesh and yep. places like that, and seen the difficulties that they face. And yet the opportunities are there. They're sitting on coal mines, on oil fields, that they should have the right to do with what we have done to great betterment to our society, and to deprive them of that is just immoral and criminal.
Well, yeah. it is actually criminal, Owen, but it is criminal to have us, even developed countries, strangling themselves with net zero policies. They are also, in my opinion, almost bordering on that name criminal, because it's going to affect every mum and dad, boy and girl in this country, the net zero policies of New Zealand, let alone the other developed countries. They're just outlandish. Sorry,
imagine
Jasper.
Imagine spending $30 million of New Zealand taxpayer money to contribute to this partnership between Google and the EDF, the Environmental Defense Fund of US, towards a methane satellite. And that's the one that's going to be orbiting the Earth, 15 times a day at 350 miles of altitude, and it will be beaming bright red. And, you know, the Indian media covered it last week, saying that there'll be a wall of shame now, and the emitters would have no place to escape. It was quite an article, that one. And I keep thinking it should be blinking bright red over the motherland, home to the world's largest dairy herd. But will it?
I think a lot of politicians have been conned absolutely and utterly. And there's a bunch of people who build and launch satellites must be laughing all the way to the bank. Another massive con job pulled off. You know, one of the ridiculous things is that the last government just had an obsession with spending money, and as though that somehow just throwing tax money at problems will resolve them.
Imagine problems.
This is a really good illustration of money gone down the drain that we'll never see a red cent of benefit from.
Oh, but you've got Susie Kerr and the lady I've forgotten a Sara Malenkov or not, Malenkov or some name like that, salivating. Yeah. This is going to be fantastic for New Zealand. We're going to be able to pinpoint the little methane burps and belches from cows down to the minutiae. And yet the BBC news article that I read had a global picture, you know, a picture of the world. New Zealand didn't feature on it as a hotspot. I mean, how dare they do that? How dare they?
You know, the way I look at it, Don, is that a great farming leader from up in Gisborne, Neil Henderson, has had his methane tested measured on three occasions and got three different results, markedly different results. If we can't measure methane on the farm, how the heck are we going to measure it from 100 miles up?
How dare we try? How dare we try?
And waste taxpayer money, $30 million, when we talk about a cost of living crisis and people not able to afford the basics. I mean, if you went out and asked the average person on the street, would you rather have, you know, food on your table that's affordable, or would you rather self-destruct for God knows some unknown benefit to a generation 100 years down the line? I would think most Kiwis would see it.
True. And one of the things that New Zealand has going for it that we don't push hard enough is, you know, we provide 40 million people with food that's clean and green, you know, free of so many of the things that many people object to. You know, it's a great story. And, we're not exploiting it to the extent that we should be. There's a many roads to go down that I think, and probably, Don, you'll understand this really full well, that in the good old days, and I can go back to, you know, well back, as you can see, we just shoveled produce onto a boat and sent it to England. The only marketing that was done was sending the Prime Minister or the Minister of Agriculture to London once a year to negotiate prices in Whitehall. That was our marketing strategy. And we survived on that, and we did well. I mean, my father had 40 Jersey cows and made a good living down on the farm, and he was happy. When Britain joined the common market, and that wasn't the only factor. There were many factors occurring at that time. But, you know, we struggled, and we still struggle in some ways to market from the point of view that we're good, we're the best, we're the most able, we're the cleanest, we've got the lowest carbon footprint. Let's get up on our back legs and say it and be proud of it. We're too retiring. There's too much, dare I say, Otiduan Presbyterianism in our approach to marketing. You know, we need to be prouder of what we do and be, you know, prepared to go out there and tell our story.
Yeah.
Well, and one element you missed there, Owen, was that in 1985 we went subsidy free, and there's still people in New Zealand that there's bloody farmers, they get protection money. Well, New Zealand farmers don't get protection money, and long may that last, in my opinion, although you do wonder if we're going to have to compete in the rest of the world with people that keep getting protection. It's getting more difficult. The other thing is, I've always said that our ETS, our emissions trading scheme, is really the true ETS for us, is our efficiency trading scheme. That's the international gold standard. Yes. Yes. And that subsidy-free farming is there. And just a reminder, listeners, we have to remind ourselves constantly that the science around methane that the IPCC and others constantly peddled was effectively modeled in isolation. And so the methane potency was measured in a dry atmosphere in a laboratory environment and then put into their models. When you actually put it into the mixed atmosphere, as we obviously live in, methane is close to irrelevant in terms of its warming effect. And that is agreed to by most scientists, I think. The trouble is we just haven't got it into our national psyche. Hey, Owen, I don't want to cut you off, but we've had half an hour of your time, and I think what we can leave with perhaps is ask you to keep us constantly informed, or as often as you can, on the progress of the Methane Science Accord and how you're getting on. We'll be watching and the media output as well from other players perhaps, but all the best in your quest to get the farming, local farming entities and the government on side, and then hopefully you'll get some global alliances built up as well. So all power to your arm, and we thank you for coming back on RCR Greenwash today.
No trouble. Always glad to cooperate with you, because these are so vital, these messages, not just for the future of farming, but for the future of New Zealand. If we get the kind of decimation that's been predicted through, you know, the meat and wool sector and even dairy from in taxing methane, then, you know, the country's at risk. So I'm always happy to have an opportunity to talk and to get the message out there, and we'll certainly stay in touch and be glad to keep you updated. Thanks very much for the opportunity.
Thank you so much.
Fantastic,
for coming
Alan. Thank you.
That was Owen Jennings from the Methane Science Accord. This is Greenwash. 2057 is our number, or email us at inbox@realitycheck.radio.
With your help, we can continue to fight for freedom. This is not possible without your generosity. Join our quest for the truth and our freedom by simply visiting www.realitycheck.radio/donate to make a difference today.